Imagine like being handed the keys to your very first home. It is a massive milestone, right? But there is a catch.
Right, a pretty big catch, actually.
Yeah, so if you get a better job in another city and try to sell that house, the government just steps in, stops the sale, and takes the property back without paying you a dime.
I mean, that sounds like some draconian hypothetical, but it was the actual reality under South African housing law, right up until the 2006 Housing Amendment Bill.
And that is exactly what we are getting into today. Welcome to this custom deep dive where our mission is to decode Gazette Num 29502.
Yeah, we are basically translating 28 pages of, really dense bureaucratic text into a fascinating story about property rights and government power.
Because, well, reading Legal Acts usually feels like reading a stereo manual for most of you listening out there. But I promise this one has hidden drama about who actually gets to own a home.
And it also completely rewires who controls these massive billion rand budgets.
Yeah.
But to really understand the human impact here, we actually have to start with the accounting side of things.
Right, follow the money.
Exactly. So the bill kicks off by just tearing down the National South African Housing Fund, along with all the provincial funds. They just move everything into standard primary bank accounts.
Wait, why dismantle a dedicated fund for housing? That seems, I don't know, a bit backward.
Well, it comes down to how modern public finance actually works. Newer laws, like the Public Finance Management Act, or the PFMA, and the Division of Revenue Act, they already mandate how revenue gets divided.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, so from the national treasury down to the local levels, the money is spoken for. Having a separate, like, ring-fenced housing fund was essentially double booking the money.
So keeping that old fund was like a massive corporation, having a central marketing budget, but then also sending separate marketing checks to every regional branch through some totally different software system.
That is a great way to put it. It just creates a huge paper jam.
Wow.
And by clearing that paper jam, the bill creates a massive framework to accredit local municipalities instead.
Right. So they are shifting the power to plan and execute housing programs directly to the municipal level.
Exactly. If a local government proves they have the capacity, they get the authority to run the show themselves. It clears those national bureaucratic bottlenecks.
Which makes total sense because the local municipality actually knows where the roads are and what the community needs. Unlike, someone sitting in a national office hundreds of miles away.
Yeah, the money and decision-making move closer to the people. But shifting power to local governments really only sets the stage for the most contentious issue in the bill.
Right, what actually happens to the people living in these houses? Which brings us back to that wild scenario from the beginning.
Yes, we are talking about sections 10A and 10B. The original intent behind the old law was, well, it was understandable. I mean, the government was building state-subsidized housing.
And they wanted to stop people from just immediately flipping the houses for cash,
Right.
right? Or losing them to predatory creditors.
Exactly. So they legally barred owners from selling for 8 years. But the execution of that 8-year rule was just incredibly harsh.
Yeah, if you tried to sell within that window, the law essentially treated it as a notice of vacation. The state just reclaimed the house.
Right. And the legal drafters point out a glaring lacuna here, basically a huge legal gap. The previous legislation restricted sales, but it completely failed to establish a mechanism for how the state would buy it back.
Or at what price, right?
Right. Without a specific valuation process, it defaulted to reclaiming the house with zero consideration for market appreciation or, like, fair compensation. So the amendment mercifully steps in to fix that.
By repealing Section 10B entirely.
Yes, it consolidates the rules and mandates that if the state buys the house back, it has to be at a fair purchase price agreed upon by both parties or set by a registered valuer.
And they also dropped the restriction period from 8 years down to five. But I have to push back here on behalf of everyone listening. 5 years is still an incredibly long time to be trapped.
It is a massive chunk of a person's life, yeah.
Yeah. Imagine you get a better job offer in Cape Town 3 years after moving into your subsidized home. You are legally paralyzed because you can't sell your asset to fund your move.
Well, you are hitting on the central tension of public housing policy here. The government is trying to safeguard a massive public investment against exploitation.
But in doing so, they risk financially trapping the exact citizens they intend to empower.
Exactly. 5 years is a compromise, sure, but it absolutely restricts mobility. The accounting fixes, like the PFMA compliance, make the system function. But these property rules dictate how citizens actually live within that system.
It really shows that legislation is not just dry paperwork. It dictates your freedom of movement and your ability to build generational wealth.
Absolutely. It is the invisible architecture of society.
Which leaves us with a final thought for you to ponder today. If a government heavily subsidizes your home, where exactly is the line between a public asset and personal property? Does true homeownership only begin after that 5-year clock finally runs out?